This is the Final Round Podcast, coming to you live from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. And now your host, Chris Marquardt.
Good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to Final Round Drag Racing Podcast, episode number 53 on deck tonight. We got a good one. Jason is joining us via Skype. We had some information come out of Lancaster Dragway over the weekend. They did all their Hall of Fame introductions over the weekend. Jason said that he'd reached out to the folks, and we're going to be talking with some of the group from Lancaster here through the course of the winter, so we're looking forward to booking that in the coming weeks. This will be the lead-in, basically, to our winter break, so barring anything unforeseen, we probably won't be touching base with any of you fine folks that are listening right now until after we get back from the Christmas holiday. There's a good chance that we'll be catching up with you in the week between Christmas and New Year's, though. We got Jason waiting in the wings right here. Jason, how are you?
I'm good, Chris. Yourself?
We're doing okay. You're working from the home office tonight.
I am. Hopefully this will work out for everybody.
Well, I don't know who I'm going to play WWE Champions with later on this evening, but nonetheless, we will endure.
I would say, I mean, overall, I think we can make this work. I know it's not ideal, but hey, it's better than not having a show, right?
Right. It was trying to get everything in line this evening. Running a little bit behind what our planned schedule was, but nonetheless, here we are. The Hall of Fame inductions happening over the course of the weekend. Lancaster Wall of Fame includes John Torelli, Mike Swinarski, Dick Collins, and Mac Myers. Pretty cool that those guys are all now enshrined on the Wall of Fame. Unfortunately, though, at this point, we still don't have a buyer that's been named for Lancaster.
Yeah, we don't. I will say that Lancaster's season for 2019 is certainly still up in the air. I mean, I've heard various people potentially interested in the property, but there's no buyer as of yet. And I guess, you know, we still have some time, but I'm kind of hoping, I guess, that, somebody will step in here and buy the property. Unfortunately, Gordon Regeer has said that, you know, he's not going to conduct drag races essentially as long as he owns the track anymore. Right. So that's kind of a bummer. So I guess we're just gonna have to find out and see, see what happens here. But hopefully overall, like I said, somebody will come through and buy this so that we can kind of continue and add more people's names to the Wall of Fame. And the guys that went in this year were very, very deserving. Mike Swinarski, long time racer out at Lancaster. Not only is he, you know, just multiple championships and won a whole bunch of races and been a real, real tough competitor, but he's been a big supporter of the track and other racers out there. So certainly very well deserving. We've obviously had John Torelli on the show. Everyone should be pretty well aware of what John's accomplishments are. So again, real, real deserving. Mac Myers, for those that don't know, was a long time tow truck operator out at Lancaster. He was out there for a long, long time. I think I'm not 100% sure. I don't really know him, but I believe his son is out there and has been running the tow truck for the last, I don't know how long, maybe 10 years or so. But Mac was a great guy, passed away some time ago. I'm not really sure when, but again, another very deserving person. Dick Collins, honestly, I don't know Dick. But that doesn't necessarily mean he wasn't any more deserving than anybody else. I mean, so right. Far, everybody that's gone in, Jim Zakia, Jimmy Oddie, Joe Schmitz, Donnie Razor, I mean, just all, really very deserving people again. So, like I said, hopefully we'll have a racing season in 2019 there and be able to continue on.
We've got one Jeff Jackson joining us on the line. Jeff would certainly be one of those folks that if he had the opportunity to race at Lancaster, that would eventually be enshrined on their Wall of Fame, a storied career, to say the least, and still very active in the superclass divisions out there in Division 6. So we'd like to welcome Jeff formally and officially to the program. Jeff, how are you?
Oh, great, man. Thanks for having me.
For sure. We appreciate you coming on and making some adjustments to accommodate the West Coast lifestyle. I think this is one of the first times we've had somebody on Final Round from this far away, but nonetheless, it's great to have you on and another successful season in the books. You've got quite the career going for yourself. Just sort of set the stage for what it's like to have been blessed with such success in drag racing as a whole.
Well, you know, it started back in the day. You know, my dad, he raced in Southern California, and he did very well down there and raced all over in Orange County and Irwindale and all the places. And then when we moved to Oregon, he still had his race car, and then I ended up, you know, taking his old car, and I won the high school drags at Woodburn the first time out in it. And so it was, you know, what can you do from there? You just got to keep going. Then, you know, my dad goes, you know, the car just ain't running as fast as it used to. And so he perked it up and got it going. And I don't know, kind of went from there and, you know, did the Firestone Centerline series back in the day. You know, did some bracket racing, and
sure, it
worked out pretty good. And just trying
holy cow, is that picture of the Mustang that you just put up, Jeff? Is that or Chris? Is that your dad racing?
That was his dad from 1965, I believe.
No way! Wow.
Was that the tan Mustang one, or the black and white one?
It's the black and white one. Yeah.
Yeah, that was my dad in, I think it was 65 or 66, an F stock automatic.
Wow, that is super cool.
Jason's getting up to look closer.
That's super, super cool. Love that.
You know, it was kind of funny because I was going through some old pictures that my dad had and you know, just kind of rumbling through some stuff, and I found that picture, and I was like, whoa, F stock, and back in the day, that's pretty cool. And I'm trying to find the one that when he ran his, I think it was a 64 Belvedere. And he held B stock record in that for a little bit, and so I'm trying to find that picture, and it's just like a needle in the haystack. And so if I find it, I'll post it up one of these days.
Now, that Belvedere was the end of the Mopar days, right? After that, it was Ford front to back from then until present.
Yeah. His Belvedere had a 383 in it back in the day, and his buddy had the 426 Hemi.
Okay.
And so, but that was kind of a neat car, I guess. But I, you know, I wasn't around then, but my mom keeps telling me it was interesting.
I'm a huge fan of that car, and I've never seen a picture of it.
Well, I'm trying to, if I can find this picture, I'll definitely post it up, because it was definitely a nice car. And to see my dad race was...
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Is that the Mustang that your son, for the most part, is driving now every day as his everyday driver?
The blue Mustang?
Well,
my parents bought that car in 1969, and they're the second owner of it. Then my dad drove it, and my mom drove it. Then they didn't want it anymore, and so I bought it from them, and it then went through the whole thing, I don't know, sat in my shop for like 25 years. Then my son decided, when he come to live with me, he goes, hey, what are you going to do with that car, Dad? And I said, well, I don't know. And he goes, well, can I drive it to school? And I was like, well, I don't know, it's worth a lot of money. And so he ended up driving that car to school for 2 years. And it's kind of scary, you know, because I told him, I said, the thing's got a locker rear in it and stuff. And I said, you can't get on it whenever it's wet. I mean, make sure it's perfectly straight. And, so he drove it to high school, and last year he ended up in second place in high school drags, and his girlfriend ended up in third place. So the car's got a little history now.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
that is super cool.
Now this blue one is a street version of your drag car, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so this is a... this is one of the many pictures that we've got of, well, this is not it at all. That is everything is running awful right now. This is not,
well, I guess your car, Jeff, that is, I guess, when did you build that car?
Back in the, well, originally I bought that car in California when I lived down there for a little bit, and it was just like a regular Mustang. And then, we end up back halfing the car. It was probably about 92. We back halved it, and that was all right. I mean, we had, you know, back in the days, trying to cut a 410 street and Super Street was kind of brutal. And so we went to Las Vegas, and I think we're in fifth place, sixth place, something like that. And we went to Vegas, and that track was hot and greasy, one-lane track. And on the way back from Vegas, my dad and I got talking and said, hey, you know, we can't have this going on if we're going to be doing this. And so we end up building a whole chassis car, and we just plasma cut the body off and built this car that we have now. And it's been upgraded a couple times over the years. And, you know, back in the day, it had a 406 FE Ford motor in it. And I don't win, like, the fastest I think I had it in Super Street was like 130 in probably 95, something like that.
Jeepers. Going with the Ford combination all along, it's got to be a little bit more challenging in terms of, I guess just budget. I mean, it's just got to cost more to keep the Ford together, isn't it?
Well, not really. I mean, no. I guess when you get to the point where I'm at now with this motor, the money's all about the same.
Yeah.
You know, cause
fair.
Like, I'm in the product. Like right now, it's a 565 Ford that's 25 over on bore, so I think it's like a 571 now.
Right.
And I'm in the process of putting some, you know, getting some new pistons from CP. In fact, I just got done making the combustion chamber mold over the weekend. I got to ship it out to them and so get some pistons made for it. But,
holy
you know,
cow.
When you get to that point, you know, when you go, you know, aftermarket block and, you know, the Brian Crank and Krilla rods and stuff, it just, I don't know. It's just a big step up.
But I know we're bouncing back and forth between the motor and the car itself. The car itself, so the shell that's on that now is the original shell that it started with from the factory. All the rest of the running gear has been swapped over, obviously, with being a chassis car and stuff. But that's the original shell?
That is the original shell from 68.
Wow.
And it's got the original deck lid and doors on it. So
that's
I have
cool.
to make 2,800 pounds for Super Street.
Right. That'll help.
I did not realize that still had original steel parts on it.
Oh, yeah. It's got the steel balance in the back. And
I thought your car was all fiberglass at this point.
Just the front end is fiberglass right now.
Wow.
And the rear bumper.
That's pretty darn cool. And did you modify the body at all as you made it a tube chassis car?
Nope, just, like I said, we built the chassis, and then we plasma cut, you know, the body off and the old stuff and fit it on this one. It's all bolted on. In fact, you know, probably half a dozen bolts hold the whole car on.
Yeah. And so. I guess, is it the... You know, the car, I guess it just must be, I mean, real, obviously those cars were long from the factory. I mean, they're not like cars from today, right? But it must just be really deceiving. It has to be, I guess I'll call it, you know, an optical illusion to a certain extent. Because the car is so low to the ground, it looks longer than a stock Mustang.
Well, it is, because I got the, you know, many years ago, well, it's kind of a long story. The front end on it is all glass, and we had that done a long time ago. What happened was we went to Chicago, and we were racing in the Jegs All-Star Race in 2004. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we noticed when we come back look at the TV version, you know, the Diamond T version of the videos of the event, the car was actually, when the car would get up to kind of speed, it actually started lifting up. And it was kind of like there's a boatload of air underneath the car. And so my dad and I, you know, it's a long drive from Chicago back to the West Coast. And so we had a lot to talk about in that period of time. And so we were talking about front ends and this and that. And so my dad, when we got back to the shop, he got online and we're looking around for different front ends and this and that. Then we found this guy in Florida that made those original, like the Pro Mod Mustangs that they have now. There's a guy in Florida that recently made those molds. And so we contacted him and had him send us one of his narrow molds, and I had to cut that whole thing apart and rebuild it to fit our car.
Ah, okay. So how much longer, I guess, is the car? I mean, is the wheelbase the same or no?
The wheelbase is the same, but the nose is longer.
Yeah, so how much longer is the nose than a stock nose?
A lot. The NHRA allows you 45 inches from the center of the spindle. We're 44 and a half.
Okay, so you took it right to the limit then.
Well, just in case NHRA has a problem measuring, I want to make sure I was on the good side.
Right. Probably a wise move.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you know, Jason, you know, with NHRA, you always got to go right to the edge, because if not, somebody else will do it.
Right.
Well, when you do, they don't like it, and they call the police on you, so that's how that goes.
Well, that's happened before, so I'm not too worried about it. I've dealt with NHRA on that stuff already.
So how long now is so when did you actually build this car then, I guess, into a, let's call it, into a purpose-built race car?
When I come back from Vegas in 94, my dad and I started building this car in 94, 95.
Okay.
And back then it had the original front end on it that was steel, and because we had to make weight because we had the small FE motor, the 406 in there, and we still had 500 pounds of ballast in it.
Wow.
So
what does that car weigh? I mean, if you were to take all the ballast out of it, I mean, what was that car weigh right now as it sits?
Well, probably about 2,600 pounds. But you got to remember, I got the motor that's in it now is a lot heavier. The block is heavier, and I got the dry sump on it, and all
and
the other
steel
stuff.
Doors on it.
Yeah, we got dual batteries, and I put as much weight in the car as I can without having all the ballast in it.
Right, right.
So you got to play that weird game with NHRA, and I. You know, when we scale the car and stuff, you could actually, if you were to take the, like a laser and cut my car right through the center of the car, it's 50-50 mm-hmm. on both sides with the ballast and everything and me in it.
Yeah. Now, I mean, you've been running Super Street with the car. I mean, well, I guess you probably don't run much Super Street any longer. I mean, the car is pretty much a top sportsman car now, right?
No, but my main deal is Super Street. This past year, my son wanted me to do some grudge racing, so I've done some grudge racing.
Okay.
That's been kind of interesting.
I want to hear that story because I did not know that you were doing that with the car. All right, so you're still. Basically, when you're racing the car at this point in the mid '90s, you kind of make it where it's a full time race car. You're running Super Street with it. Actually, now Chris is showing a picture of you in the winner's circle. This has got to be with the original front end on it that he's showing right now.
That was my first national event win in Arizona.
Okay, what year was that?
I won a championship in '99, and that was the first time I used a gold card at a national event, and I ended up winning it.
So, Chris, I don't know if you are aware or not, but a gold card basically gets awarded to a division, or you got to finish the top three, I think, if you get in the world, right? There isn't any for Super Street, but if you finish the top three in the world, and you get a gold card as well.
You get a gold card for only winning a divisional championship in Super Street.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because there is no national points. But if you finish as a divisional champ, you get yourself a gold card, which gets you free entry into as many races as you want, right?
Any national divisional or national open back in the day. And plus, you get one crew member too.
Do they still give you a crew member? They probably took that away.
Probably by now.
Right. But so what year was that then? So 98 was that year that you won that that event?
It was 2000.
Okay, 2000. And what year did you put the replica front end on the car then?
That was 2005.
Okay, all right. Because you can definitely tell the difference in the look of the car now compared to then when you look at those two pictures.
I was doing some math trying to figure out what the car was going to do, and what happened was that when we were changing all this over, I changed the hood scoop, all that stuff, we lost like 33 to 35% of the frontal area of the car.
By switching to the new front end.
Yeah, but the problem was that we actually lost speed with the longer front end, even though it was more aerodynamic, because of the... It's clipping when you're going down the track, it's clipping the lights with the front end, not with the tires. And so you get actually less run at the mile-an-hour cone compared to what we were doing before.
Right. So how much speed did you lose?
Probably about two and a half.
Not that it really makes a difference, right? Because the car is really going the same speed. It's just it's the way it's calculated because, like I said, you're still leaving the line with the front tires, but now you're tripping the finish line with the front end, so it just comes out different, but you're still going the same speed, really.
Yeah, it's about 30 inches you lose, something like that.
Wow, okay. Now, when you built the car to be a full-time race car, I mean, I remember the car initially. I mean, anybody that has followed, let's call it, you know, .90 racing for any period of time certainly has seen your car in National Dragster from, you know, from the mid-90s at least. And, you know, for a long, long time, you had sponsorship with Rug Doctor. I told Chris earlier today before we went on that, you know, you were one of the first people that I will say that I know as a sportsman racer that had, you know, let's call it quote unquote major sponsorship on the side of your car. You know, there was a few, obviously, you know, Sheldon Gecker had Velpro, but you know, you guys had Rug Doctor. I mean, like I said, there was a few of you, but there wasn't a ton, obviously. And, you know, Rug Doctor was on the side of that car. It couldn't have been much after you started really traveling with that car that you had the Rug Doctor sponsorship, right?
Yeah, it was probably, well, I got the Rug Doctor sponsorship in probably 95-ish, somewhere in there, right after I built the car.
Okay.
And so he was with me for like 13, almost 14 years. And,
wow.
You know, for any sponsor beyond that long, I mean, it started off as a small deal. I mean, it was kind of funny how we met. When I had my shop in Wilsonville, there's this guy that just walked in and goes, "Hey, can I borrow a wrench?" I said, "Well, sure. What do you need?" And he goes, "Well, I got a 428 drag pack Fairlane." And I said, "What do you want to do?" And he goes, "I want to tighten up my valve cover." So I give him a half inch socket and a wobbly and a long extension and a little ratchet. And he goes out there, tightens up his valve covers, comes back. And, you know, we got talking about cars a little bit. Then he said, "Thanks." And I didn't see him again. So I go to Burger King one time and he's over there eating lunch and we got talking. And he goes, "Well, I see your race car's here." And we got talking. And I said, "Well, I'm getting ready for the national event." And then he goes, "Well, I'll be there." I go, "Really? You going to watch?" He goes, "No, I'm racing."
Oh, no kidding.
So I go, "What are you racing?" He goes, "Well, I'm racing Top Fuel." And I go, "What? Top Fuel?" So that whole thing started off. And he goes, "Well, come by and see me." Well, you know how the national events are. You know, there's so many people wandering around and stuff. I didn't hook up with them. And so in that process, I see him again eating at Burger King. And we got talking. And he goes, "Well, Jim Epler's my... I'm sponsoring him." I go, "Really?" And so that's how the whole process started with Rug Doctor.
No kidding.
It started off kind of a small deal. Then it grew into something really big. And even like today, Rug Doctor, that's what that car is known as. And my son and I went to the SEMA show last month, and we were just wandering around. This guy comes up and goes, "You don't happen to own that Rug Doctor Mustang?" I said, "Yeah." And so my son actually couldn't even believe it that we hadn't had Rug Doctor since like 2010, and people still remember that car.
That's cool.
Well, I have to say that, you know, knowing the car as long as I have, it looks weird to me without Rug Doctor on the side. And that doesn't necessarily mean you should have Rug Doctor on anymore, right? I mean, the deal is over and done with. It's over and done with. It's run its course. But it looks weird to me without Rug Doctor on the side. It looks naked, essentially, with that bear spot on the door, you know?
That's how I feel every day when I look at it.
Well, we need to hook back up with the Rug Doctor guy and be like, "Come on, man, open the wallet again, and let's put Rug Doctor back on here."
I'd love to have Rug Doctor again, but that whole process, that whole situation went down the road because they sold the company and things changed, and it's kind of a bummer. I mean, I still had time on the contract, but yeah, there's lots of things that happened in that time frame.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. We may have touched on this subject before on the show. I don't know if we have or not, but you know, I've had a couple of really good sponsors over the course of my career, and you know, I was always disappointed when the deal ended, but not angry or upset about it in any means, right? I mean, I look back on it and I'm like, you know what, I'm really thankful that I had the opportunity to have a couple of really nice sponsors that helped pay the bills at the time, because, you know, quite frankly, I don't know, I wouldn't have been able to do what I was able to do when I was doing it without their help. So yeah, it's a bummer that it ends, but hey, all right, that's the way it goes, and you move on and you hope you can find somebody else, you know.
Well, you know, I can never thank Rug Doctor and Kent Benson and all those people that were associated with that whole program, because they pretty much made me who I am. They've changed my life, my whole racing situation. I mean, I can't thank them enough. I mean, they were the heart and soul of what I am today as a person, you know, because of their efforts in helping me.
Yeah, I mean, you had an opportunity to do a lot of racing and a lot of traveling, probably that you wouldn't have been able to do without their help, right?
Oh, most definitely. And the recognition was more than you can imagine. I mean, I remember, you know, pulling into places that people didn't know who. I mean, you pull into the plane, truck, and trailer, and as soon as a car came out, it was like, uh-oh. I knew that we were pretty serious, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, and I will say that, you know, at the same point in time, you know, they paid for marketing exposure. You gave them very good marketing exposure. You did very, very well while you were traveling. So we talked earlier. So you were 3-time Division VI champ. Actually, it's up on the screen here. So 3-time Division VI Super Street champ. You had 4 national event wins. You know, countless divisional and open wins. Like I said, you were in National Dragster pretty much almost every single issue that came out, you know. So you got them plenty of exposure. And here we are, you know, the Rug Doctor deal ended, you know, let's call it 10 years ago. Here we are still talking about Rug Doctor 10 years later, right?
Oh, I know. But what was really funny is when we were at the SEMA show, and this guy come up and goes, "You got the Rug Doctor car?" And my son and I were just looking at each other like that had passed long ago. I mean, it's just funny that people remember that.
Well, that's because the car was, you know, it was so competitive. So many people saw it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you were a terror up and down the West Coast there, and Super Street. Now, did you ever run Super Gas with the car, really, at that point in time?
Yeah, you know, I ran some, like, Vegas and Pomona when they didn't run Super Street. I'd ran Super Gas a few times.
Yeah. It's funny, Chris, you know, Jeff and I have talked in the past, and I've been whining to him about, you know, living in Western New York and how crappy it is for tows for us to, you know, the various division races and national events even, you know, for the most part, you know, our closest race is 4 hours. So now where you live right now, Jeff, so Woodburn, do they have a division event at Woodburn now?
Yeah, that's pretty close. They got 2 now.
Oh, okay. So, but I mean, and that's close for you. But after you go past Woodburn, the next closest event is how close?
Let's see, Boise, Idaho, which is 450 miles from here. Then, what really is bad is the next one after that is Sonoma, which is, oh my God, that's probably 800 or 900 miles. Then after that, you know, you're going to Southern California, then Vegas, and Vegas is like 1,200 miles from here, and another 300, so say 1,500 miles to Arizona.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I think my truck can drive that road by itself because it knows those roads like you can't believe.
Yeah, and you know, for us up here, you know, where we are, it's like I said, it's 4 hours to Lebanon Valley, and then you got basically. It's 5+ hours to Norwalk, and then you got 6 hours to a whole bunch of events, you know, Maple Grove and Cecil County, and Epping is probably six and a half hours. So, I mean, yeah, most of the events I can probably go to, oh, I'm going to say 6-7 events all within, probably more than that, maybe 8 events all within 6 hours, which it's just a bummer that the closest is 4. But, yeah, for you, it's like, okay, you have a couple close ones, but after that, good luck. Hope you like spending money on gas.
Well, yeah. Well, when we moved to Vegas and lived down there for a little bit, it was nice because you had 2 Vegas races. You had 2 divisionals there. You had Pomona. You have 2, which is Pomona from Vegas is only like a 4-4.5 hour drive. And then you have Phoenix, which is like, say, 286, 300 miles. And, you know, that was nice. I liked that.
Yeah. Now, I mean, you and I are, I guess, overall from a racing and travel standpoint, you know, kind of mirrored each other pretty closely as far as when we really stopped traveling. And you took a few years off, right, from racing overall?
Yeah. I took some time off because, you know, you got kids or whatever and they need your attention. And so I took some time off. And one of the things that we ended up breaking a rod when I was in Vegas running the national event, and spun a rod bearing, broke the rod. And I thought at that time, you know, maybe that was a sign I should just take some time off. I took a couple of years off and, you know, regrouped and thought about what I was going to do. And then it's about that time where my son started living with me and is like, okay. And he kind of prodded me along to get back going again and put this thing back together. And so we, you know, it was kind of funny because the first time out we took it to a division race was the Seattle division race, and we won the first time out. And he thought it was too easy. And I said, well, that's just dumb luck that we won this first time out. And, you know, after all these years, and so, I don't know, it's kind of humbling, kind of nice, you know, to, you know, put things together and know that you still have a little bit of an edge on people.
Sure. I wish I could say the same thing. Yeah, my racing seasons haven't been very good the last few years, but I mean, when you came back out, I mean, I remember talking to you when you were waiting for your crank. I mean, you had literally 10-month lead time or something like that on the crank that you were waiting on?
Well, you know, when you buy stuff from Bryant, they pretty much hold you hostage, or any big crank company, and especially Bryant, they got so many customers, they don't even need your money. And what you do is you give them a check for half or pay for the whole thing all at once. Then once they get the check, they put you in line. And so I already had my order in and everything, and it was probably, geez, I don't know, 18, 20 weeks later, the guy goes, your crank's shipped. I go, gee, even to Christmas. I thought I had about 3 birthdays since I ordered it. You know, it seemed about that long ago.
So and, you know, waited a long time. You put the motor back together. You got back out there. Now, I mean, the car went quicker compared to where it was previously with the new motor in it, right?
Yeah, I changed a couple things in the motor. I changed the rotating assembly a little bit. It's still the same bore, basically, and crank size, and just put a different rod assembly in it and a piston, and that seemed to help it along. And, you know, I kind of, you know, just whittled away at some stuff I thought was a plus that, you know, we've kind of been, you know, losing a little bit of horsepower here and there. And so when mm-hmm. I bought new stuff, I figured, well, let's just go this route and see what happens. And so it made a huge difference. It just, like, even now, this past year, you know, people are creeping up on me a little bit, and people are, you know, from Division 5, Steve Dominguez, he was harassing me and going, hey, you know, you hadn't been 160. And I told him, hey, I'm the original guy that was 160 back in 2002, 2003. Where were you guys at? I was faster than super gas guys.
Right.
And then so he harassed me, and so I popped off I was at a bracket race, and I had to, you know, just messed up one of my time trials and said, you know, here's your pass. And so I gave him 161 mile an hour pass and at 1090. And this past year, been kind of playing around a little bit, some different stuff, and we're going like 162 at 1090, and we're still not even, I mean, I'm, you know, 6 seconds out in the one tune-up for 162, and when I'm going the other way, I'm still 7.5 seconds before I'm full throttle.
That's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. I'm going to write NHRA and ask them to ban you.
Well, they've been trying. They try to take different stuff all the time, and so I've got them off my back for a while. But you never know. I mean, now they're allowing you know, Don Davis Roadsters and Super Street, which I don't know how they can do that with, you know, the weight of the cars and stuff, and that's a whole other issue there.
Yeah, I will say that I was not. I mean, it's one of those things where it's funny because. In general, I'm okay with, let's call it, open competition, but I was not really in favor of when they opened it, Super Street, up to people for multi-car entries. I mean, come on, man. I mean, Super Street was supposed to be, you know, the super entry-level class, really. And now you're opening up to guys that, all right, yeah, I'm going to pull them in my toter home and I got 3 cars and... obviously, you know, NHRA did it because the fact that they saw that they could and people were going to be able to, you know, spend more money with them. So, yeah, sure, why not do what our, you know, really our paying customers want to do. But I was not in favor of that. Of course, there's lots of things that NHRA has done over the years that I haven't been in favor of.
One of the things that kind of made me a little angry about the whole situation is that, okay, if you're going to allow us to, I mean, back in the day, I'm the person that lobbied NHRA to get the entry level taken out of the rule book, because it's kind of disgusting to look at that as, you know, we're entry level. I mean, entry level is junior dragsters, or even nowadays you can call like super comp entry level, because junior dragster guys come right from so maybe that's entry level.
Yeah,
but I had that taken out. But one of the problems with, you know, Super Street, when they allowed the double entries or the, you know, allowed us to do that other stuff, that's fine. But why didn't they make us a national champion class?
Oh, they should have done that too, absolutely.
That's, to me, that was like a kick in the gut, you know, to allow us to open it up to other people, but not allowing us to be national champions, which I think sucks, but that's just the way it is, I guess.
Yeah, and I don't know if they have any plans on changing that at all. I mean, I have not heard anything. I mean, you may have. Usually, actually, at SEMA, don't they usually announce the – well, or maybe at PRI, don't they usually announce, like, rule changes for 2000 – or for the next year at one of those shows?
When I was talking with Danny Grassi at the SEMA show, he didn't have any new rule changes. He said they were still in the process of doing some stuff, and – they weren't going to do anything to PRI until after the first of the year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I figured, I was thinking maybe they didn't start enforcing the muffler rule or something like that.
Well, you know, that was, I think, a hit and miss deal way back in the day at that. I mean, I think it was for someone to sell some mufflers, because nowadays I haven't seen a muffler on a car in so long, I don't even know if they know what they look like.
Well, it's funny because I need a new set of headers built for my race car really, really bad. And, yeah, I mean, I am certainly not going to make any sort of design changes to allow for the installation of mufflers at all. I had the old cone inserts that I put in to basically show that I made an attempt to try to attenuate the loudness of the car.
Right.
Now, did it meet their sound requirements, their decibel rating requirements? I don't know. But at least I made an attempt. But, yeah, I mean, 10 years ago, I would have tried to make some type of concession to be able to get mufflers on the car. Now, it's like, I'm assuming that that's still in the rule book. But like I said, I can't remember the last time I saw a car that had mufflers on it. And it's like, I'm certainly not going to put mufflers on my car now.
Well, actually, you know, I don't know if I'd build another car without mufflers. I kind of like them now. They're, you know, I can hear all kinds of weird noises in my motor. And if it acts a little stupid, you know, I can hear it. And if it's really loud, and another thing that's really nice too is being, you know, high mile an hour. I like my car to be as quiet as possible as I'm rolling up on somebody, because if not, they can hear you coming.
Cheater.
I mean, well, heck yeah. just bring your money and protest me. I'm ready. I could use the money for beer or travel money.
Yeah, it's and that's a good point. And I know that I have heard from other people that do run mufflers that they really, really like them. They like the fact that the car is nice and quiet. And like I said, they can hear other things. I don't know. I guess I'm deaf at this point in time, so I don't mind having a loud car. But yeah, to me, it's just the cost associated with them. I mean, to get a good set of mufflers, I mean, you're spending $1,000 for a decent set of muffler collectors, right?
I don't know. I've been running the Dynamax 4-1, and those are nice, kind of quiet. They take just the harshness out of it, and
yeah,
you know, for the money, that's probably about my best bang for the buck, I think. And I don't know. Like my son, you know, he's racing the high school drags, or at least he was, and now he's bracket racing the car since he's graduated high school, and you know, it still has the full tailpipes on it and stuff. And and I told, you know, he wanted to run open headers, and I said, well, you know, it's really gonna be loud and crappy sounding because it's not like the motor in the race car. I says,
right,
it just doesn't have that pop to it. And so we start up at the house here with the open headers and stuff, and he goes, "Ooh, that's terrible." And so now I got him convinced that quieter is better. So, you know, our car, the way it is right now, runs like 1260 at almost 110 miles an hour. So really a mile an hour is on the other end. And I said, well, you can sneak up on people that have the loud cars. And so he finally realized that quieter is better.
Right, right. So that the 67 is now running 1260s?
Yeah, 68, yeah.
There,
well, it's got a 428 Cobra Jet in it.
When did that motor go in it?
That's always been in it.
Oh, okay. All right. I didn't realize that that car was that fast.
Yeah, and it's, well, the thing is, what's kind of funny about that car is He leaves it idle, stabs the gas, it's in drive. The car shifts at like 4,600 and shifts into third at 4,600 and goes through the lights at 4,800. So if he would shift it at 6,000 like I've begged him to, it'd probably be 11-second car.
Yeah.
And that's what's just
It's all about consistency, though, right?
Pardon?
Yeah, I say it's all about consistency, though, right? I mean, if the car is consistent, if it shifts consistently at the right RPM, I mean, all right, yeah. I mean, he certainly is giving up some ET and some mile an hour by not shifting at higher RPM, but,
What's nice is it doesn't have the ET, so I don't care about that, but it has more mile an hour than the ET, which means he'll be rolling on people at the other end.
Right. Yeah, so you can fool people because people think, okay, 1260, normal car would be, I don't know, 100 miles an hour or whatever it is. And,
yeah, 102 or 3.
And, yeah, you're obviously quite a bit faster than that. So, now this past season, did you guys share driving duties?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was, when he was racing high school drags, he was doing really good. And I said, you know, if we have enough time at the end of the year, I'm going to let you just take the car and we'll let you make some passes in it. And so what we did was they had a rain out, like, hey, we'll let you race, but it's only going to be 8th mile. So I let him drive, and he made 5 passes, and they were with the throttle stop on and the thing, you know, going through the lights at 5,900 RPM in my car. He mm-hmm. went 731, 730 at 109, 110. And then last year, I told him, you know, he did such a good job in high school drags, and I said, here, let's go get your license. So we went to Woodburn. And he made his passes, and it was kind of funny because his first pass, you know, trans brake and everything, he let off the gas when he let go of the trans brake, his foot fell off the gas a little bit on his first qualifying pass, but he still went like 11-something. And I said, I come back, and he said, hey, did you let off the gas? And he goes, no. And I said, well, it's right here on the data logger, and he lifted. And so it was kind of funny. Then he, his next pass, he went out, and he held it down a little bit, and I said, you at least have to make it to where the final stage of the throttle stop comes on. I said, you at least got to go that far. And so he did that. Then his second pass, he went 10:59 at 159. His next pass, he went 10:39 at 161. And then his final two passes, he went 9:70 at 166. And his last pass was the same thing. And I think he keeps telling me that Super Street scares him fast, you know, scares him more than the Super Gap because of how hard the car accelerates on top end of Super Street.
Okay. Is it, how much different is the throttle stop setup for the two classes?
There's just timer number changes, but in Super Street, we're going 50 plus miles an hour from the 8th on.
Okay.
So it's really accelerating.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I will say that, it's crazy. Is he 19, 20?
He just turned 20 on the 10th.
Okay, I was saying, I figured he was probably 20. But, at 20 years old, you know, being in a car that goes 165 plus, I mean, that's a pretty fast ride, right?
Got his attention. I told him, I said, here's how it's going to go down. I said, you're going to make these passes, and when you cross the line, you got to be on. Get ready to get on the brakes because it's going to get real short, real fast out there. And so, and especially Woodburn kind of has a short shutdown area. And so I said, well, just pay attention and you'll be all right. And it was kind of funny because he'd kill the car. I mean, he'd be on the brakes hard enough toward the end where it'd flood the motor out a little bit and it'd stall. And you could hear him on the GoPro. He'd go around the corner and crank it up again. And it was pretty funny. But the best thing is I can remember is just looking at his face, his expressions after he'd come back after that run, and his eyes were so big, and he'd have like permagrin on his face. And you know how it is when you're going really fast, Jason. It's just like, this is really cool. And, you know, for a kid that's 20 years old going 160 plus miles an hour, I don't know how life can get any better.
Right, right. Yeah, it's, certainly a good ride. That's one of the nicest things about, you know, throttle stop racing, I will say, that, you know, as a parent, if you want to put your kid in the car, it's very easy to now tune the vehicle basically to, you know, build into it, right? you know, when I started driving the Corvette, I mean, at that point in time, it was a full blown race car, and you know, it was, you let go of the button, you're full throttle, and that's the way it goes. There was no okay, wait for the throttle stop to kick in, and it'll slow down and slowly build speed for you. So that's one of the really nice things about the throttle stop racing these days.
When he was racing Super Heat in his last two, you know, his two middle passes and his license passes, I don't think he really understood how hard the car was accelerating on top end, because he comes back and goes, man, I can't believe how blurry it gets out there when things really moving. And I said, well, you know, wait till you get next to somebody, the guy's only going 140 miles an hour, and you're wheeling on him 20 and trying to make a, you know, a 5,000 judge at the other end. I said, it's pretty tough out there. And so I said, just think about if you had really a car next to you and you tried to judge him at the stripe. And so he's finally grasping it. And this year, he ran a super gas event at Seattle, and he ended up winning that, which I'm pretty proud of him. And then earlier in the year, you know, I just put the motor back together, and it was our first weekend out. And he goes, well, even before that, he goes, Dad, let's do some grudge racing. I said, grudge racing? What the heck? What do you want to do that for? I said, we're NHRA guys. And so he ended up bugging me for like a month and a half. And I said, okay, just what is it? What's the whole deal? And he goes, well, they have a class that they're running this weekend that's all steel body and naturally aspirated. I said, well, we fit into that. And so he ended up, he goes, well, let's put the big carburetor on and change this. I said, no, we're running Super Street Trim. We ain't changing nothing. I don't got time for that stuff. You know, this is our gig right here. I said, worst case scenario, we're going to put the wheelie bars on and that's it. And so we go out there and run this grudge race, and out of 20 cars or whatever, I make it down to the final three. And I think I freaked the guys out because I end up breaking the torque converter, and they didn't know what to do with me, a Super Street car, and these guys are doing their deal out there. I raced the guy with a small motor compared to those guys, and here I am going rounds, and it's one of those deals where it's an instant green.
And, oh, yeah.
So it was pretty cool. I was pretty excited that we did so well. But I don't know, we might try some more grudge racing in the future. It just depends on what it is.
I would say, why wouldn't you do more of it?
Well, it's just, I don't know. You know how it is, you know, you're kind of in a rut, and you just race the super classes, and you race, you know, the brackets, and I don't know, the grudge thing is just, I see too many of those guys that aren't really prepared, they're right on the ragged edge, and you know, they spinning out, leaking oil, and I don't know, I'm just not into that. It's kind of, you know, I don't want to wreck my car, have someone come into my lane, and because of, you know, trying to be a hero or whatever, and kind of bothers me a little bit, but I don't know, we'll have to see. Maybe we'll go try it again.
Yeah, and I get that. I mean, Chris and I have talked about this before as well, that, you know, generally with those cars, it's not a matter of, you know, if you're going to crash, but when you're going to crash. Eventually, you're going to crash one of those cars. You know, they just have generally so much power, you know, more power than what the chassis is really meant for. And everybody I know that's had a car like that and has, you know, at least scraped the guardrail at some point in time. And it'd be a real bummer, right, to be going down your lane nice and straight like you are because you got your stuff all set up and it works well. And next thing you know, someone gets into the side of you, no fault of your own. So I totally get that.
It was kind of funny because my son's girlfriend, Mackenzie, she had never seen my car, or even my son, now that he's older, even seen the car make a full kind of all-out pass. It was like this was an eighth-mile grudge race.
Yep.
And so, you know, I told him, I said, I'm going to do a cross-the-line burnout, back up. And so as I go past them, Mackenzie, when I got back, she goes, I think I went deaf as you went by. And I just couldn't stop laughing because the expression on her face when, you know, she was telling me about how loud it was. And she had rubber in her hair and her face and stuff, and I just couldn't stop laughing. And so then my son goes, wow. And then even the guy at the grudge guy that does the videoing there, even he had a video and posted it and whatever. And just the car, the way it is in Super Street, sure, and it carried the wheels out like 80, 90 feet on the wheelie bars. And I was like, wow, that's pretty impressive. I mean, it hadn't ran like a top sportsman deal since probably 2006. So it was pretty neat. I had a lot of fun.
Now, assuming that was that a no time type of event?
Yeah, there's nothing. West Coast Grudge. There's no time on the scoreboard, but you know you got your half a time slip. And
right,
with the car carrying the front wheels and breaking the converter, I mean, the thing went a 115, 660 foot, and, yeah, you know, that was with the back wheel, so I don't know what it would do, you know, on the ground, so I was pretty impressed with it.
I would say, I have to say that I've found that type of racing to be very intriguing, and I guess if I had the money and didn't have an original 63 Corvette, I would be very interested in potentially, trying something like that. It just looks interesting to me. I mean, was that a prep race at least?
Yeah, I think they might have prepped the track.
Okay, I would say, because the no prep thing to me even is very, very interesting, and I'd be more than willing to try it, but I'm definitely not taking my prized possession that means the world to me and taking it out there and throwing 2,000 horsepower at it and saying, all right, let's see if it holds, right? I'm not doing that for sure.
Well, you know, my son keeps talking me into stuff, and I keep going for it sometimes, but he wants me to put a pro charger on the car now so we can
run Super Street with a pro charger.
And so I don't know how that's going to work out.
Well, I know that so you're obviously friends with Billy Lieber as well. I mean, he's put one on his dragster, and I know that he's got nothing but good things to say about it as far as, you know, what the cost was for the power that he gets out of it. And I know he's barely turning the thing and still able to run, I will say, with the dragster, I think he's running 620s or 630s or something like that at whatever ridiculous mile an hour it is in the quarter mile.
Should be about 230.
Certainly if you're looking for a fairly inexpensive way to go fast, I mean, that definitely seems like the way to do it, and it looks like a heck of a lot of fun.
I've been talking to the guys at ProCharger and Vortex, and the guy at Vortex, they both said about the same thing. If I put it on the car, he says I got the right cubic inches, I got the right cylinder heads, I got all the right stuff. And he goes, I told him I don't want this thing to make outrageous boost or anything, and 10, 15 pounds, something like that. And he goes, well, I said, what kind of horsepower do you think that kind of situation puts out? And he goes, well, first off, you wouldn't be doing that. And second, if you didn't make 2,000 or 2,300 horsepower, I'd be depressed. And I said, oh, my God, 2,300 horsepower in a Super Street car. Doing a power wheelie at 1,000 feet.
Right. I've wondered how you must have to do, if you were going to do, let's call it throttle stop racing, really try and slow the car down for 1090. I mean, I'm assuming at that point you can't run a conventional throttle stop. Now you have to do everything with an MSD, right? I'm guessing.
There's a couple ways to do it. I've been thinking about it and talking with them about it, and I'd have to run one of their programmable, boost deals on there. And I think the way that we have the car set up, or could set it up, I would have to run it with a blow-through carburetor, no fuel injection, and I could still run the throttle stop, and I can make it work. I've pretty much figured out how to do it. It's just the idea of doing it.
Well, I'd be real interested to see how that works. So I think you should spend your money and go out and get yourself a pro charger and kind of figure out get all the bugs worked out, and then let me know all the secrets so I can go and do it.
I was thinking sponsorship from Jason would be a good start for right now.
It looks super fun, and I've wondered whether or not – I figured you wouldn't be able to do it with a throttle stop. It's interesting that you think you could do it with a throttle stop, because it would be really interesting to be able to have that much power and just have such a humongous top-end charge, right? And from what I've heard from the guys that have built these kinds of motors, it's like you really don't have to build anything as far as the actual components that go into the combination. They don't have to be anything high dollar. You can pretty much build a fairly inexpensive system put together and put a pro charger on it. Next thing you know, you got 1,500 horsepower easy.
I was talking to him about my cylinder heads and that stuff. I got a really good set of cylinder heads on the car, and he goes, actually, what you're doing, it'd actually be better with the good cylinder heads versus a crummy set, he goes, you'd be amazed at how much difference it would make. And it's like, well, I don't know if it's worth, I don't know. It's just such a lot of stuff to go on with that. And I mean, I'm partway there with some of the stuff, and I could go either way. And I don't know. It's just, I keep thinking about it. My son's going to talk me into it eventually. And I keep telling myself that I'm going to build a bigger motor first. I've been thinking about doing a 645 inch motor and putting that in the car, but I just haven't got around to putting the order in for a crank. And once I go that route, then I'll be committed to what I'm going to do.
So what's, I guess, so right now, what's the plan for next year?
My plan is I'm going to get this thing back together, get my pistons ordered probably next week. As soon as I get the combustion chamber mold, then I'll start that process and then put the motor together. I'd like to go to Boise, and I don't know about going to Canada, but definitely go to Boise and start the year off there and see where we go from there, do the both Woodburn, Seattle, maybe head down to Sonoma, because I guess they're having a Super Street National event there, and you can do the divisional at the same time.
Oh, okay.
And that might be a, because you're already driving that far, I mean, just another couple days there.
Sure.
And maybe let my son do some driving, because he's, he seems to be pretty good at it, and he doesn't want to race Super Street. He wants to race Super Gas, so I guess we'll race Super Gas with him, and I'll do Super Street.
I was just going to ask, so how are the two of you going to figure out who races what?
Well, as soon as his wallet gets a little bit bigger, then he can decide what he wants to do.
So for now, it's like when you're traveling, all right, so big events, you're going to do that. Now, what about for local bracket racing? I mean, you guys racing, you're not racing every weekend, are you?
No. We pick and choose the races we go to, because, I try to do my divisional or some of the races that I want to go to. We're going to do that. Then he'll put the blue Mustang on an open trailer, and he'll just tow to probably the furthest he'll go is maybe Woodburn or, mainly Seattle or Bremerton or, Bremerton to go over there and do some bracket racing.
Yeah.
I tried to tell him, I said, transbrake racing is a fairly easy, you can get yourself together with that. I said, I really want you to be a good foot brake racer, at least have the common knowledge of foot braking, what it's going to do, how all this stuff works. So I think if you're a good foot brake racer or reasonable foot brake racer, the other stuff just comes so much easier.
I can't disagree with that. I think if you can hone your craft doing both, it's certainly going to benefit you. There's no doubt about it.
And one of the things I stress on him and his girlfriend both, because she races also, and I stress that they really need to concentrate on the weather, learning how to tune your car. Because I said, basically anybody can drive. Yes, you have to have some talent or have, some whatever. But I said, tuning is, watching the weather, learning how it's going up and down, different humidity and barometric pressure and all that stuff. I said, if you can learn that stuff and have a basic idea how that really operates and know, your situation, the track, say, some tracks at 4 o'clock, the weather changes, and for no reason, the weather looks the same on your instruments, but theoretically it's changed. I said, you need to know those kind of things that happened to your car, why it picked up or why it slowed down. I said, and that's what I've really been focusing with them about the mm-hmm. bracket racing is learn the weather.
Right, right. Yeah, well, I mean, you're teaching them how to be good bracket racers, whether they're, let's call it regular bracket racers, foot brake racers, dot 90 racers or what. But, I mean, these are all the fundamentals that as a young racer that you really need to learn if you want to be successful, long term. And especially if you want to start stepping up and going to the bigger races and, racing with the better competition. If you don't learn these things, you're going to go to those big races and you're going to be very disappointed, generally.
Well, yeah, like I told him, I said, you can't just jump in my car and go win. I mean, it's a winning car. But I said, if you learn the process, it makes it more gratifying how you get there.
And, right, right.
And so that's been my goal with both him and his girlfriend is just, have fun. That's the most important thing. Go to tracks that you enjoy and have the most fun at. And once you get to that point, then you're on the right track.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a real good philosophy, and we definitely would like to, I guess, you know, keep in touch and see how things go for, I guess we'll call it the whole Jackson family racing in 2019. Before we let you go, is there anybody that you know, you'd like to thank or give a shout out to?
Well, you know, there's a couple people. Kent Benson, a rock doctor, when he spots me, those people, they you know, they treat me like $1 million, and you know, if it wasn't for them, I mean, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at now. My dad especially, I mean, him and my mom both, they put up with me for so long with, you know, with the racing and whatever, and you know, if it wasn't for my dad and his starting of the situation, I don't think I ever wouldn't be where I'm at. I mean, that's just the bottom line. They both, you know, back in the day put up with me and, you know, high school drags and, you know, going places and doing this stuff. And I said, it really, I don't know. I think it made a better person out of me. It changed my life of racing. And, you know, I don't know. There's so much, even my son, I mean, you know, he's finally realizing that, you know, what effort goes into racing, of having to wash the truck and trailer and get all that stuff done. You know, it's just a lot of work. And, you know, I kept telling him, I said, you know, this stuff's got to get done. I mean, nobody's going to do it, so we got to do it. And you know, I want to thank him and his girlfriend. And that's, you know, my mom and dad. I said, they're the people that made all this happen. And I said, if it wasn't for my dad especially, I'd, you know, give me the car, his old car back in the day to drive at high school drags and, you know, going out winning the first time. That just, that really prodded him along to get me going again.
Awesome.
So I just, that's just how it is.
Well, we got some pictures up of you and your dad, without him, obviously, it was nice to be able to kick the show off right off the top of that picture of him racing the Mustang from back in 65 or 66, even though we couldn't tell what episode it was, and for sure to have a great base like that to springboard at night. I've got the chance to pass that on to your boys, so the legacy continues.
Bro, we're going to keep trying.
Well, enjoy the rest of your evening. The night is young out in the West Coast. We're inching up on the 9 o'clock hour here out east, and we've got to wrap things up to cap our hour together. But we absolutely appreciate you coming on the show, and look forward to keeping in touch as the off season progresses to hear a little bit more about what you've got planned, what your boys got planned, and of course the summer progresses. Make sure you keep in touch as well. Let us know how things are going.
I will. And Chris and Jason and everybody out there, have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and hopefully we'll all be doing very well next year.
We appreciate that.
Thanks, Jeff, you too.
Thanks, and you too.
Okay, you guys take care.
Take care. We'll see you later.
Thanks. Okay, bye.
There goes Jeff. There goes Jeff Jackson. We do appreciate him coming on the show. Jason, we'll be in touch, I'm sure. We appreciate you coming and making time for us from the home office.
Try, but hopefully next time we'll make it back into the studio.
We'll make some plans. We'll be good.
All right.
That is going to do it for this one. Coming to you from the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls from the North Park building. We'll see everybody in, well, what's supposed to be 2 weeks. We'll have to see if it happens. We'll see everybody in a couple weeks. Have a great Christmas.
From the FingerLakes1.com studios in downtown Seneca Falls, New York. We'll see you right back here again in 2 weeks. Thanks for watching.